Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to the debut show of my new podcast, Fanon Flashbacks. We're going to get together with some old friends of mine and go over IWA Mid-South memories. Today's guest joining me is one Ben Rich. Got to go way back into the archives of IWA Mid-South history to know who Ben is. He was with We went to college together at the University of Kentucky, and it was Ben and Les Johns who was supposed to join us today. But Ben, Les is a little under the weather, so get well soon, Les. We're going to go ahead and do a recording and do a trial, get this podcast started. So we're just going to go over some memories here that I share with Ben Rich. He was on the first ever IWA Mid-South show in Louisville or in Lexington, Kentucky. Him and Les helped bring IWA to Lexington. We're going to get into that in a little bit. But first, just so people know who you are, Ben, let's go over what made you a wrestling fan to begin with when you were growing up.
Jim, first of all, I appreciate the invite on the show. I've been a friend of yours for a long time, and I would like to say that it's poetic that on the first IWA podcast we have a no-show by Les.
Exactly.
His hot dog and handshake must not have made it to him in time for him to appear on the show. So, but that's a subject for another time. I started watching wrestling in like 1985, believe it would have placed me in maybe first or second grade. Growing up in Louisville, we had a lot of televised wrestling. We got WWF, we got NWA, Crockett stuff on television. Memphis watched regularly every Saturday. So I don't know what exactly got me into wrestling at that point. It was all, larger than life stuff, especially with WWF, with Hogan and all the toys and the advertising and rock and wrestling and the cartoons and the dolls. I had all the LJN figures. So I got hooked at a young age, and I haven't exactly been able to unhook myself some 40 years later. But yeah, so just been a big fan for a long time. Followed wrestling from then till really I got to high school when I was a freshman. I kind of stopped watching shortly after Flair won the Rumble. That was the last wrestling pay-per-view I saw until I got to college. So for about a 3-year period, I didn't follow the sport. I got more into UK sports, Boston Celtics, as you can see behind me, doing that sort of thing. So and then when I got to UK, my neighbor in the dorm came over and asked, since he didn't have a television, we had a TV and cable. He asked if he could come over and watch TV. I was like, "Well, what do you want to watch?" He said, "Well, on Monday night, I want to watch Monday Nitro." And I was like, "Nitro? What's that?" And he said, "Well, it's WCW wrestling." He said, "It's great. They have all the old WWF wrestlers have come over: Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Jimmy Hart." And this was pre NWO, so we're talking about Dungeons of Doom feuds, the Frog and Giant. I don't know if I'm allowed to curse on here. The Giant.
There's a disclaimer in the opener that Nick
Okay.
Manoa is going to put in that
All right. Excellent.
due to foul language in the discussion of deathmatch wrestling,
Yeah, I mean, come
that
on.
viewer discretion is
Yeah.
advised.
Okay. All right.
So go ahead and be
All right.
yourself.
All right. So it's like, hey, it's Monday night. The K Layer restaurant right next to the place. Monday nights they have chicken dinner, so we go get chicken dinner, bring it back up, and watch wrestling. So we'd watch Nitro Monday nights, and then started watching some Raw too. And so I got hooked on watching wrestling again. Lord have mercy. So started watching again, and then I guess it was the next year that at the College Republicans I met you and Les, And somehow or another, we, went from straight-laced Republican, rah-rah, we hate Bill Clinton. Somehow we found out that you all watched wrestling and I watched wrestling. The next thing you know, the Republican stuff really didn't make too much of a difference. Let's talk about wrestling. Let's watch wrestling and everything else. Now, you and Jim, had a more continuous viewing of it. You were into the internet and ECW and tape trading and all that, especially, Les and your Observer subscriptions and that sort of thing. So your
That
fandom
was
was a
all
little
less. That was less.
Les's fandom was a little more advanced than mine. But yeah, we got together and you all found out about the bingo hall shows in Louisville for IWA. And I think you all had maybe been before I went with you all. I don't really remember.
Now, I think we all went together that first time.
Did we? Okay.
Yeah, so we'll backtrack since this is the first episode, and I will give
Okay.
my background as well. It's a lot like yours, except I started my first memories of wrestling was like 1980, 1981, 4 or 5 years old. At that point, my father had gotten into an accident at work, and he had hemophilia, so he was already on crutches and couldn't walk hardly on his own. He worked for the Illinois State Police as a fingerprint technician, right around the time that the Blues Brothers came out. And
Yeah.
he actually worked at the Joliet prison for Joliet Jake of the Blues Brothers. So I always thought that that was kind of cool. But he worked there, and somebody held the door open, tried to hold the door open for him, and you had to like go up a bunch of steps. And they were renovating the building that they were working in. He was actually across the street from the penitentiary in like a little crime lab building. And he was going up the steps on his crutches. The person let the door go, thinking that he had already made it in. The door closes on his crutch, and he falls over the side of the stairs that had no
Jesus.
railings. And they had been renovating, so they had a pile of windows that they were had just replaced, and so all the old windows were onto the side, and he crashes through the windows that were piled there beside the stairway. And the first big IWA Mid-South bump Fannin took was going through these plate glass windows in 1980 for my dad. They rushed him to the hospital. They would have to give him pig blood in order to get his blood to clot because he was a hemophiliac. And
Wow.
those little bottles of pig blood were like $100,000 a bottle. It was ridiculous. And part of the reason now why I'm no longer a college Republican, because of healthcare stuff like that, and just the insane costs that healthcare have in this country. But this is not a political podcast, so we'll go on and say that, when they finally got his bleeding to clot, it was right on his spine. It eventually ended up severing his spine and leaving him paralyzed from the waist down. So all I had to do with my dad growing up from the time I was 4 years old on was, watch TV. And my dad was a huge wrestling fan, so I would watch wrestling with him every chance I got. And Saturdays were TBS wrestling. At that time it was Georgia, and Tommy Rich was my just all-time favorite at the time. Loved me some Tommy Rich. And when he left, well, I guess it was more Georgia went off the air and got bought out by Crockett. And I guess Tommy Rich ended up going to Memphis around that time instead of being with the Crocketts. So my mom would always, anytime there was a wrestling magazine at the grocery store, she'd get me the grocery magazines if it had Tommy Rich on it, so I could follow Tommy Rich's career. And watched NWA wrestling until Flair went to WWF. I never really cared all that much for WWF. I wasn't into the cartoon stuff. I liked the blood and the guts and the grit and the hard hitting of NWA and Crockett that I was growing up watching. And World Class and UWF Bill Watts was available in Chicago, so I'd watch those shows. And it wasn't the cartoony stuff that Vince McMahon was doing, so I never really got that much into the WWF. I liked the very beginning of Hulkamania, but then once I discovered the Four Horsemen and Ric Flair and became a heel fan, then I hated Hulk Hogan from that point on, stopped watching WWF and didn't start watching it again until Flair ended up going there. So the first pay-per-view I ever watched live of WWF was your last one, the Royal Rumble,
Royal Rumble.
when Flair wins. Ended up going back to watching WCW when Flair went back, when Hogan came in and beat him, and they did that retirement match at what it was, Halloween Havoc 94, 95, whatever it was. I stopped watching wrestling until, I had a satellite dish back home, and they always had, I think it was called like Destination America or something like that, was the channel. And every night, late at night, they would have a different syndicated wrestling show. So I think I was able to watch some USWA. I was able to watch some Smoky Mountain. And I was then able to find ECW was on that channel as well on the satellite dish, and became ECW really like hooked me back in to the wrestling. It had the blood and the guts and the hard hitting, and I really liked the Pulp Fiction montages that they were doing, and it just caught my attention and got me back into wrestling. And the way I remember it, and you might have to correct me on this, I think that meeting at the College Republicans where we were all together, I think you and Les were putting up flyers or something, and you started horse playing and wrestling together and doing like you were going to try to. There was a table there or something, and you were like, "Oh, power bomb through a table," or something. And I'm like, "Whoa, wait a minute! You guys are wrestling fans," and from that moment on, we were thick as thieves, and started watching the wrestling together. And yeah, Les had the subscription to Meltzer and had tapes galore in his closet of all the different wrestling, and had pretty much all the NWA, WCW Saturday nights. Had everything taped, and we'd just sit there and just watch all old wrestling together. And AOL Grandstand was the thing back then. And I remember we got onto AOL Grandstand and ended up learning that, oh my God, Ian Rotten is in Louisville, Kentucky, running hardcore wrestling shows on a weekly basis. And I think IWA had started in October of 1996, I think it was. And we started going to the shows there at the Kmart building. I believe it was January of 1997, I think, was when we first started going. You may have a better memory of that, but I remember it was every Thursday night we'd pile into your car and drive from Lexington over to Louisville. And remember it was. I can't remember the make of the car, but I remember it was a tank and it had the automatic bright lights. And so we'd be going down Interstate 64 and you'd have the brights on and it would reflect off the road sign and bounce back and it would cause the brights to go off, thinking that, an oncoming car was coming. So it was just constantly brights on and brights off, brights on, brights off. And we'd be driving in the middle of the night. Going to the Kmart building, and we would eat Fazoli's before the show and have like 5 million endless breadsticks that we'd
Breadsticks,
eat.
brother.
And then we'd go watch some people bleed to death in front of us at the Kmart building. And I guess that was really how it all began. Moving on from now that we've got that kind of background going, what do you remember as what got us actually friendly, I guess you would say, to begin with Ian, and then what even led to actually trying to go into business with him and running those Lexington shows?
Yeah, and this is where it would be good to have Les participating because he is the one who instigated all of this. I think he would call in and, say, "Hey, we're coming to the show, save us tickets." And then he kind of
Now,
began a relationship.
the hotline,
Yes.
right?
Yep.
Yeah, call in the hotline.
Call the hotline, and that the Lexington hotline, I set up, and I unfortunately got stuck paying for, but that's we're ahead of ourselves. But that is something that I think started when Les would call, say, "Hey, we're coming in. I need, this number of seats," and because we usually sat in the front row, sometimes we would be in the second. It would just depend on, I guess, how far in advance he would, make the call and that sort of thing, or who all was coming, because we ended up having some other friends of Les's specifically would come, and then we kind of made friends with people at the shows who we'd go with. But at the time at UK, I wrote for the student newspaper, the Kentucky Colonel, and so I was pretty much a heel writer. I would call
There was
this
no pretty much about it, Ben. You
right.
were the biggest heel on campus in 1997.
Yes, through
You
not, until
were
I got fired, pretty
until you got
much.
fired.
But yeah, I wrote for the student newspaper. My nickname was actually the most hated man on campus. You could easily say that outside of the basketball team and maybe the quarterback on the football team, I was probably the most well-known student at UK, just because all the nonsense that I would write in the newspaper that would get people fired up to where they would write letters to the editor saying how terrible I was. And just write things that would get people fired up, and not necessarily that I believed them. Now, a lot of the stuff back then, I'm sure I did, but yeah. So anyway, I was well known. I had a weekly column in the newspaper. So when we had originally talked to Ian, I remember this. We had talked about having them come in and how we would have like bluegrass championship wrestling or something of our own that Ian would help us book guys on and we'd use his license. I think that's what we kind of wanted to do in the beginning, and Ian shat on that. He said, "No, we'll make an IWA. We can find somewhere to book a show. We can do a show." And we came up with an angle that would have me get mad at Ian for whatever reason. And it's just something over time when Ian would come out, I would, boo him and get mad, or I would go sit in the bleachers or whatever. And so this went on for several weeks. And the plan for the angle was that at the end of the match, I would yell at Ian back and forth, and then he'd invite me to come in the ring, and me being, "Oh, this wrestling stuff's fake. I can beat you up, whatever." So what happened is that when the faithful came, I rolled into the ring, and the plan was he was going to hit me with some stiff kicks, because he said it stuff's got to be stiff, because it's got to look real. We don't want to have me pulling punches on a fan who charges the ring. So I'm like, "Oh, okay, sounds good." But and the plan was he was going to beat me up some, and then he was going to hit me with a chair, blade me, which I don't believe how I ever agreed to that in hindsight. And so he'd leave me in a bloody heap. So that was the plan, and we had kind of built up to it. And I think the night we were going to do it originally, I had worn a. He told me to go to. We went to the Walmart down the street. He was like, "Oh, get yourself some aspirin to thin your blood." I think I bought Tylenol, not knowing. He's like, "Nah, that's not going to work." So we ended up pushing the angle back. So when it eventually happened, I got in the ring, and he did the kicks. He picked me up, and before the chair shot, he was going to give me a double arm DDT. So okay, whatever. And at that point, we had actually, Ian had done ring rentals prior to that. On Sundays, they would rent the ring out, so we came up a couple of times and did that. So I had a little bit of familiarity with being in the ring. Obviously, as a kid, we wrestled in the backyard and wrestled in the basement. So, and we had done some stuff. So I wasn't a 100% novice, but I'd never done anything professionally or taken a bump. So anyway, what he did is that when he picked me up for the double arm DDT, apparently, I guess I got scared and tried to protect my head with my left arm. And when I did that, and when he went down, all of our combined weight of 500 pounds or whatever it was, my left shoulder popped out of the socket.
You're being kind of conservative
So,
with that estimated
all right.
combined weight, because
All
that
right.
was Ian at his biggest, and you were no
And I was no slouch.
probably
That's
close
right.
to 600 pounds, closer to
So,
600 than 500.
he hit the double arm DDT. I was like, uh-oh, because I felt something was wrong with my arm. I didn't know what. I was laying there sweating, tears in my eyes. I was like, ah, oh, my arm, trying to tell Ian not to clock me with a chair and make me bleed like a pig. And he didn't, it was all really a blur. I remember getting carried out of the ring, cussing at fans, nursing my arm, and getting taken back to the locker room. And from there, I know the doctor checked me out and ended up going to the
Do we even
hospital.
know if that was actually a doctor?
He may have been a
I mean,
veterinarian for all we
he
know.
right. He could have been a. I just remember he took like there was a cardboard box and he made a cardboard sling to put to put your arm into for us to go to the hospital.
Yeah, I mean, it hurt like hell, but everything after that was really a blur. I know Les Thatcher was there, and he thought it was a shoot, right?
Yes, Les Thatcher was the what he was
The commissioner.
on air, the
Yeah.
commissioner of IWA Mid-South at the time, and we had made ourselves known to the people at these IWA shows. At the time, I remember the UK game, basketball games. At the Colonel, not your articles, but in the Colonel, like for every game, they would have like an article where they'd be like, "Here's what we want you to do during like the pregame introductions for the other team," and it would be things like turn your back, hold up a newspaper and read like you're bored, or when we say there's this person's name, everybody in the student section yell, "Who's that?" And just obnoxious shit like that, right? And so we took that with us as our heel fandom in the front row at the Derby Sports Arena, the old Kmart building in Louisville, Kentucky. And we would focus our energies on one Doug Gilbert with this. And every time Doug Gilbert would come out, we would like turn our chairs around. We would turn our chairs around. We would open up a newspaper and act like we were reading the newspaper. We'd cross our legs and we'd ignore him. And Doug would get so pissed off at us. And we would, Doug, it was either he would hit you and almost knock you out with his punches, or his Memphis style of the fans are way back from the ring, he'd miss by 25 feet and we're 3 feet away from the ring, and so you could see that there's nothing but 9 feet of air between him and the opponent when he'd throw the punch. And so then we would like stand there and give Doug Gilbert punches to each other and just do obnoxious shit. So Les Thatcher knew who we were, and in his mind, he could see us being obnoxious little shitheads enough that you would shoot, try to get into the ring and create chaos. And he's in the back. You're like in tears. Your arms dangling. You're trying to hold it. This doctor, and who knows what medical credentials he actually had. Probably, I don't even think he was a veterinarian. I think he was a would. Couldn't even say he's WebMD, at the time, because internet was so young at the time. But somebody that Ian had that played a doctor anyway in the back, and he's like sitting there trying to duct tape this cardboard box sling to your arm, and Les Thatcher's yelling at us like, "You dumb motherfuckers, I can't believe you'd get in that ring and do that shit. What were you thinking? And now you're hurt and you better not fucking try to sue us, and I can't believe this is going on, and what if next week now someone's going to try to be like your dumb shit and go into the ring, and now we're going to have a rash of this copycat motherfuckers, and I can't believe you do this shit. And we're looking at him, and I remember like you looked at him and go, it was part of the show, dude. What are you talking about? And Les Thatcher's like, well, nobody fucking tells me anything around here, God damn it. And he storms off all pissed off. And then we end up having to take you to the hospital
Yes.
with this cardboard duct tape contraption to you. What did the doctors even say when, or even the nurses, when
Well,
you go into the emergency room and you're cardboard duct taped up?
when we got there, they're like asking me what happened. So the last thing I'm going to do is say, oh, well, I was in the wrestling match at the bingo hall there over on Dixie Highway. So I made up a story to where when we were leaving, that I had jumped off the back of a Jeep to deliver an axe handle and fallen and landed on my shoulder, dislocated my shoulder. That's what I told the doctor. So they did x-rays, they did this, that, and the other, and they ended up a little Asian woman climbed on top of me in the on the chair and pushed my shoulder back into place. They gave me a sling, they gave me a prescription to follow up with some physical therapy, sent me on my way. So the next day, we had to drive back to, and this was, 3 4 hour ordeal after a show that already ended at like, 11 o'clock at night. So it's the middle of the night. We drive back to Lexington, go back to my apartment. I'm asleep. My phone rings. It's my mom. She's like, this hospital in Louisville just called to get a follow-up appointment scheduled. It's like, why were you in Louisville and what happened? Because I didn't even say anything to my parents
Right.
about driving to Louisville to go to Mud Show Wrestling every week. I wasn't going to tell them that. I'm supposed to be in school studying, making a wise investment of their money where they were paying for my tuition. So anyway, I told them, well, some friends of mine went to wrestling. I went with them and I hurt myself. I fell off the back of a car, hurt my shoulder. Like, okay, so, well, we have to get you these appointments or whatever. So I ended up, I would have to drive to Louisville to go to physical therapy. They gave me these exercises to do, whatever. Had I been a little bit older at the show, we probably would have popped my shoulder back into place and I would have gone on about my business. But what was cool about what happened is that my arm was in a sling for a few weeks. So I was at school on campus. So like, what happened? Oh, I got beat up by a wrestler. And that son of a bitch, I'm going to get my revenge on him sooner or later. And so that's how it all came about. And we were going to do a deal where it was going to be a match, Ian versus somebody, and I would be in somebody's corner, and then Ian would have a corner person, and then it would be a throw in the towel match. And so initially it was booked, it was going to be Doug versus Ian, and I was going to be in Ian's corner, and he had booked Woman of ECW and WCW fame, and Chris Benoit's wife, Kevin Sullivan's wife, was going to be in Ian's corner. To throw in the towel. And that was going to be the big main event for the show. So I was able to talk about it at school to everybody I knew. The Kentucky Colonel did a story the day of that they ran about the
Yeah.
show.
So
And I'm
I'm
sure.
gonna put the
Okay.
article up now for.
But what's funny is that when you read the story,
Yeah,
and it ran the
so
day of the show, it has a bunch of incorrect information on it as far as the match lineup. But with an independent show, that's going to happen. So,
yeah, card subject to change.
yes,
Yeah.
that should be the name of some shows.
Yeah, so I can you see the little article here?
Yeah, there's that. It's
Let
not very
me
large.
yeah, let me see if I can get this to go a little bigger. So, and I can't believe they ran an
Oh
article with
yeah.
that bloody picture in the Kentucky Colonel,
And it was black and white, so that helped. If it were color, They probably would have ran the picture black and white like Vince, when they had blood there for a while, would use a black and white picture instead of a color, so they wouldn't show the blood on their television. But yeah, so we ended up, the plan was me and Les put in money
Jeez.
to help run the show.
So there's the actual flyer, Wildcat Warfare
Yeah.
97 for the debut show.
Yeah, really nice flyer. We put flyers up around town. They sold advanced tickets at the comic book store. Yep, Comic Interlude. It says right there on the thing. Les was buddies with them because, besides being a wrestling fan, he's a big comic book nerd and had stacks and stacks of comic books. So he set that deal up. But yeah, we flyered around town. We set up a IWA Lexington hotline where people could call in and get news and reserve tickets and that sort of thing. So we put about as much as we could into the show as far as trying to push it and everything else. I think it probably drew out maybe 200 people, so it wasn't that bad, but it was a lo money loser. I mean, we lost we lost because I think I ended up paying out of pocket about $500, which killed me because I'm a college student and worked during the summer to save money for the fall. So I took a lick on that show, and that was the last IWA Mid-South show that I was officially a part of the office on, because I quickly retired and didn't want to lose any more money, especially after getting my ass beat and shoulder dislocated. So. But Les continued to participate financially in the Lexington shows. But Woman did not show up.
Yeah,
She
no
was
woman.
replaced. Yeah, she was replaced by Billy Joe Travis as the corner man. And we got to the building. It was at the National Guard Armory. We got there early in the afternoon, set up the ring, set up the chairs, and then I had to go sit in the back and wait for not only the all the boys just arrived for the show to start, but it was the main event, so I was going to be back there twiddling my thumbs for a long time. So, I'd never been the only other time I'd really been in the back was the when we got hurt, or when I got hurt rather.
Right.
So I just sat in the back and everybody came in, and this is I don't know what the protocol is. So somebody walks in, they're going to make their rounds, shake everybody's hand. These limp ass handshakes. I'm like, what's going on? Why am I getting this weak handshake? And I had no idea that wrestlers did, the worked handshake to where it was just light as a feather. And I had no idea. And I, that gave me away immediately if they didn't know ahead of time.
Yeah.
So everybody would come into the locker room, and they would be in little groups of people. And Buddy Landell and Billy Joe Travis were over on the right-hand side of the room. The locker room was actually a classroom that they had set up, I guess, for where they did training with the people who were in the National Guard. So there were a bunch of tables set up like a school room, pretty much. So Buddy and Billy Joe Travis were over on the side, and they were Billy Joe brings out a bottle of booze, and so they're drinking the entire time. And I'm thinking to myself, this doesn't seem like this is the best idea. And so once the main event rolls around, we go out, me and Doug, I beat Doug. It's like, nice to talk to you or whatever. I don't think he remembered me being just a total prick to him previously. I don't know. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I don't really remember.
I know he remembered me when we started having to work together later.
Oh,
He
sure.
definitely remembered me, but yeah, I mean, I wasn't in the back for that show, so he may not have remembered. And I just always found it just was hilarious that, the guy that's going to, fight for your cause and try to get
Yes.
revenge on Ian Rotten for you is the guy that we despised and made fun of and ridiculed for months
Yes.
before this
Now,
happened.
what's
And
funny
somehow that was put
about the
together.
deal with Doug is that when Doug was a heel, we would cheer Doug. And then when Doug was a face, that's when we turned the chairs around and booed, or like, we don't want to see this crap. Because he would usually turn like two or three times, sometimes during the
Oh,
same
yeah.
night. So
Not quite
But
like Tracy Smothers would,
yes,
but
not
yeah,
like
it
Tracy,
was he.
but Doug did jump around quite a bit. But during the match, and Ian said early on, he's because the athletic commission was, I think, going to be there or something. He's like, no blood until the last match, which for an IWA show, that was did not happen. You'd have juice in a lot of matches, but he said, Ian, strictly no blood until the main event. So that's fine. So we're out there in the main event. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm out there just talking shit to the people in the crowd. And a bunch of my fraternity brothers were there, and I'm cussing them out, and they're cussing me out, and just going around and, having the time of my life, just, screwing around. But a couple things that stick out to me about that night and that match in particular is that, Billy Joe had been drinking heavily. And so by the end of the night, he's, three sheets to the wind. And so we're running around the outside, and he gets a hold of me, and he grabs me to hit me. And I'm like, oh, great. I said, what the fuck? But luckily, Doug came up from behind, hit him. And so I was able to avoid getting knocked out,
Now,
which
was
literally
your arm still in the sling at this? Were
now
you still in the sling, or were you healed
for
up?
I'd healed up before. And so I had stopped wearing the sling at school. I think I still wore it to the IWA shows when we would go to Louisville for the shows in between the time that the angle happened and our show in Lexington. I still wore the sling there so I could sell the injury. But I think for the show, I did not wear the cast because at the end, we had planned after Ian won, he was going to give me the split leg power bomb. So I didn't wear the sling out to the ring, but so I avoided Doug some thanks for keeping Billy Joe from knocking me out, which very
As
drunken
drunk
Billy
as
Joe
he was,
Travis
yeah, as
may
drunk as he was, that would
very
have.
easily may have done. But what's funny is that Doug had gotten collar, and he goes to try to hand me the blade, and I'm like, you just cut yourself. I don't want to touch this blade. I don't want to touch this, man. I said, I don't what kind of diseases you have. You're Doug Gilbert from Tennessee, world traveler wrestler. It's like, I don't know where you've been or what you've done. I don't want to touch this. So I think he tried to hand it to me, and I was not expecting it. So I think I dropped it. I don't know if I dropped it on the mat, dropped it on the ground, whatever. But the blade didn't end up in my hand and didn't end up in my pocket. So. And then when he had gigged, it was throwing the towel. I had the towel, so he starts bleeding. And so me thinking, oh, here, Doug, I'll help you. I take the towel
Wait.
and I dab the blood off of his head. And he's like, what the hell are you doing? Because he just cut himself, and I just completely, wasted
Yeah.
that blade job. And
Yeah, but I mean, we're, nobody really wisened us up. Nobody trained, gave us
no.
anything before, you going out there. And, you're sitting there going, I'm supposed to be helping this guy, so I'm gonna try to clean him up,
Yep,
I mean,
I don't want him
natural
to bleed. Yeah.
instinct,
I don't want
natural instinct, but
I didn't want him to bleed,
that
but that was
definite that
not the
def
right thing to do.
yeah if the non-limp worked handshake didn't give you away, that definitely gave you away at that point.
Yeah, really. So anyway, so I don't really remember what happened, how I threw in the towel. I assume it had something to do with Billy Joe, did whatever to me on the outside of the ring. I don't remember exactly how I ended up throwing in the towel, but I did. I'm sorry, Doug, you took the L. And then, I went in the ring and was giving the referee hell. And then that's when Ian came up from behind me, gave me the split leg power bomb, which I did not give him any help on. So Ian must have eaten his Wheaties that morning because he was able to get my fat ass up and drop me down. And to his credit, I didn't feel a thing. So I laid there and played dead for a while. But it was funny when I got home, my roommate asked me if I was on my period. I was like, what are you talking about? Because Ian, he was a bloody mess. He had gotten his blood all over the crotchal region of my blue jeans. And I don't remember. I think it was Ian or somebody else. Or I think it was Pondo told me, wash it cold, brother. And cold water got all the blood out. so I didn't have to burn the jeans or throw them away. Or I should have saved them, and
Nice.
then I could have sold them on
Right,
eBay
there you
for a
go.
fortune to an IWA collector.
There you
But
go. That
that
was.
is that's the build up to that first show. Is there anything that you re remember specifically about that first show or what we did?
I remember. I
You know, one of
remember
a
that.
million IWA shows that you participated in.
Right. So, what I remember the most is Cash Flow versus Rolling Hard. I think that was. Let me pull that back up here. I think that was on it. So yes, Cash Flow versus Rolling Hard. I remember that Roland throws cash out onto the floor. They pile up a bunch of chairs. And I mean, it may not have been this show because, you know, you said, Ian said, no color from anybody
Yeah,
other.
there was no blood.
So
Yeah.
it had to have been a different show. I know there was a couple of shows where Roland wrestled Cash, but I thought it was the first one. I know here's one in
There,
May.
yeah.
It was one of these, one of them, and I always in my head, and again, one of the reasons why I wanted to do these podcasts was so I can straighten out my memories. But
Sure.
my memory was that it happened at this first show, and it might have been one of the others where they had wrestled each other in Lexington, but Roland goes to DDT Cash onto a bunch of chairs on the concrete floor. And he somehow misses the pile of chairs, and Cash's head just smashes right into the concrete and cuts him open wide. I mean, he's gushing everywhere. And there's so much blood that after the match, have to go into an intermission so we can get a mop out there and clean up. So, you know, we're in Kentucky in the late 90s, intermission, the entire building goes outside to smoke. You know, so everybody leaves, they go out and they're all lined up. And, you know, you guys were running the show and I had no part of it. I was not anything. You know, I think I was doing like helping with like security or anything, but I was not financially involved. I had no say in anything. I was not backstage, nothing. And they come and get me because I was the one that, you know, hey, you live in Lexington. Les and Ben can't leave. Get Cash to a hospital. He needs stitches. You need to get Cash to a hospital. And, you know, we were like Cash's first fans. You know, we knew him when he was training. And we would be front row and he'd be doing security and we'd talk to him all the time. So then when he first started wrestling and he'd lose every week, but we'd have signs in the crowd, you know, Cash Flow plus flip elbow equals victory. And we'd be cheering him on like crazy, you know. And he was so athletic and could do things that nobody else on the show could even dream of doing. And for a guy his size, it was just phenomenal. He was like a white too cold Scorpio with the way he could fly off that top rope and he would be doing 450s and flip elbows and that he had his top rope leg drop was as good as Bobby Eaton's, you know. So I'm like sitting there going, my God, I love Cash and he's so great. And here he is bleeding. And I didn't know Lexington all that great. I mean, I stayed on campus. I would walk around campus. I didn't know where the goddamn hospital was. And you know, it's not like now where you got GPS on all your phones. So I think it was you were trying to like, well, go, this is where the closest one is. And luckily I think it was pretty much right down the street. But I find like Cash is all wrapped up in towels around his head trying to stop the bleeding and getting him out to my Jeep. And everybody's outside smoking, and Cash is looking at me and he's like, oh, wow, man, that is so nice that all these people are so worried about me that they came out here to see me off to the hospital to make sure that I'm okay. And I look at Cash and I go, Cash, it's intermission. They're just out here having a smoke. They had no idea you're on your way to the hospital right now. And he's like, damn, man, you can't even give me that one. And I'm like, they're definitely out here to see you, to see that you're okay, and to cheer you on and get you to the hospital. But I had thought that that was on that first show, and it might
You
have been
know,
on one of the it might have been on one of the other ones, because I can't remember. So
it may very easily have been on that first show because you, like you said, when he bled, it was because he hit the floor hard way. So it could have been, it very easily could have been that first show. I just don't
yes, I
remember
mean,
it.
you were in the back, so you would, but that's how I remember it. And none of these, sadly, none of these sh like hardly any of these shows were recorded. If they were recorded back then, Ian would just like turn hit record on a camera and just set it on a something and run it. And you know, sometimes he would remember to go back and check it and change and have somebody change the tape. Sometimes, you know, he wouldn't, and you'd get like half the show would be recorded and it would cut out mid-match, and then you'd have nothing after that. And I mean, it's sad that this footage doesn't exist anymore, and that only the people that were there damn near 30 years ago now, like 28 years ago, what do you remember? So I know it happened on one of the Lexington shows. I don't know which one it happened on, but I in my head I always had that as being on the first one. And the only other thing that I really specifically remember from that first show was, you know, the story that you told about wiping off the blood from Doug and Doug getting so pissed off about it, because it was so eerily similar to my first experience a few months after that. You know, I got more and more involved as you guys went on. Like you said, you got out money wise after the first night, which I didn't even remember that part. I thought that you wrote it out a little bit longer than that.
No, because Les, the next show we did had a bigger crowd, and they made money on, and I got kind of jealous of Les because he made some money on the deal. It's like, oh man, I should have stayed in. Oh, nope, I should not
Yeah,
have.
you two definitely made the right. The right decision getting out, and somehow I ended up sticking around for another 12 years after that. But you know, it specifically reminds me of my first night being in the business, so to say, was April Blood Showers 1998, April 30th, 1998. And you know, we pretty much would like help with like security and stuff at those Louisville shows and things after you guys had gotten involved in Lexington. Then, you know, Ian would let us like help out at the Louisville shows. So I was like just doing security at the time. And I remember like Bull Payne thought I was training to become a wrestler, because all of the security guys would be like training with Ian to become wrestlers. So he thought I was just another one like that. And he would just grab me during shows and suplex me on the floor. And I'd have no idea what the hell I was doing. And every single time he did it, every single time he did it, it would split my jeans. You know, he'd grab onto my jeans. I wouldn't know to jump. I wouldn't know what the hell was even going on. Again, not to this day, never had a second of wrestling training by anybody. You know, and Bull would grab me, and he'd grab me by the jeans, and he'd have to muscle me over. And every single time it would rip right down the side. It would rip my jeans. And you know, I sort of have a picture that shows, you can see the split in my pants here as on the power bomb at April Blood Showers. 'Cause I got tired of buying new jeans. So I would just wear the same jeans that were already ripped and stuff. So we get to the April Blood Showers, and Joe Bailey had become the promoter of IWA, and he had left Ian. They split up because Ian wouldn't use his underage kid, JC Bailey, on the shows. Ian was having so much trouble with the athletic commission. As you can recall, he was like, there's no way with all this trouble that I'm going to put an underage kid on the show. Just wait for him to turn 18 and I'll use him. You know, and that wasn't good enough for Joe Bailey. So he like split from Ian, started his own promotion, the Bad to the Bone Wrestling. And Ian desperately needed somebody to step in that could get the promoter's license in the state of Kentucky. And before Joe Bailey was doing it, it was the ring announcer Rico was the promoter at first, and he didn't want to do it again. And I should have taken a cue from him as to, hey, this isn't what you want, And I was the one that had, my parents had both passed. I had inherited the house. I had inherited, the money, insurance money from their passing. So I was the one that had in my own name the credentials to where I could qualify to get the insurance bond that it was required in order to get to be, a licensed promoter in the state of Kentucky. So I became the promoter for IWA Mid-South early April, maybe March, April-ish of 1998. And so we were doing this build up to, April Blood Showers was going to be that 8-man tag, like elimination cage match that had I think pretty much damn near everybody that was in IWA at the time was in this matchup. And we were going to have it be where Bull Payne was going to kick my ass. It was, I think Ox Harley was on Ian's team. Ox turns heel at the end, unlocks all of the heels that had been eliminated, and they all beat up Ian. And I get in the ring as promoter and I start telling Bull Payne, you need to stop this right now or I'm going to suspend you. So everybody was told only Bull Payne touches me. Only Bull Payne touches me, right? And Bull is supposed to give me a power bomb. He's supposed to DDT me onto a chair. He's going to blade me so I can get color because I wasn't comfortable doing it myself. So he's going to blade me. And then he's going to like give me a top rope splash, and that's supposed to be it. And as a result of this beatdown, I'm going to suspend Bull Payne so he can come back under his mask as the Texas Hangman. Right. So we get out there. No one's told me anything as to how to do any of this stuff. Right. So I have no idea how to take a power bomb. I don't know I'm supposed to sit up when Bull goes to pick me up. So Bull goes to pick me up for this, power bomb, and I don't sit up. And he's like, motherfucker, sit up, God damn it. And he's struggling because I'm fucking fat ass, right? And he just drops me. And as you could, see on that photo that I shared, I come down right on the back of my neck and top of my shoulders. It was like when Kevin Nash gave Big Show, gave the Giant that power bomb and damn near killed him. I could not feel anything. Like my entire body was numb. And I'm scared to death going, holy shit, the first time in the ring, and I'm paralyzed. I'm going to be paralyzed like my father, because I could not feel anything. And, Bull gives me the DDT onto the chair. He blades me and he's standing over me and he goes, squeeze, motherfucker, squeeze. I didn't know what the fuck that meant. No one told me what the fuck that meant. So I take my hands and I'm squeezing on my head, going, okay, well, where did he cut me? I'm squeezing my head. And Bull's going, what are you fucking doing, you motherfucker? What are you doing? You're wiping off all the fucking blood. So just like you wiping off the blood from Doug Gilbert, I'm wiping off the blood that Bull had just, and he's like screaming at me, like, you dumb motherfucker. And Kenny Bolin, Jimmy Cornette's good friend, Kenny Bolin on the shows, was managing the heels at the time. He's hitting me with the tennis racket. Fuck, everybody's putting the boots to me, and I'm like, motherfuckers, only Bull Payne is supposed to touch me because I'm suspending him. Now you're making it where I should have to suspend every single one of you. Like, what are you? They're all like taking their turns on me, and I can't feel anything. And I know, I think it was, if Tower, it might have been Tower of Doom. That motherfucker might have been in that match. I can't remember. But he like hits me in the small of the back with a chair. And I'm like, well, I should have to suspend him now too. But you know, no, nobody paid any attention to the only bull Payne touches me. But it was like, it just baffles me. Like they put you out there to take a DDT. Don't tell you, don't put your arms down. Don't block. Like Ian should have said, hey, I'm going to take care of you, because we didn't know what the fuck we're doing, you know. And you end up getting hurt. They don't tell me what I got to do to take a power bomb. Just, hey, give him a power bomb. Why the fuck not? You know, what's the worst that can happen? Well, I can land on my head and almost die, you know, but whatever, you know, that's just how the shit was back then. And I get into the back, and luckily some feeling started coming back, and I knew that I wasn't paralyzed. But I mean, I obviously had a concussion from the way that I hit, because I my the bell was ringing. And I couldn't get it to turn off, and Bull's like screaming at me, and he's like, and then he goes, what the fuck do you do during training? Because you suck. And I'm like, Bull, I've never been in training. He goes, what? And I'm like, I've never had one, never been to a training class, nothing. It's like, I've never done any of this stuff before. And he's like, well, what the fuck? I've been suplexing you on the floor for months now. And I'm like, yeah, you've just been grabbing me and suplexing me. I haven't, that's all been you. I haven't done any, you know. And it boggled his mind that Ian would put somebody into that position and didn't even smarten them up that I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. So they assume, you know, that I'm fine with everything. And it was like, just crazy how that's how shit happened back then, you know. And I can't imagine like W, can you imagine Vince McMahon or
No.
Tony Khan or somebody just putting somebody out there and saying, okay, go do a power bomb, go get dropped on your head, and you know, you'll be fine, everything will be good. Just crazy how stuff like that happened. You know, but that night it ends, you know, I suspend Bull Payne. He comes back as the Texas Hangman. He ends up beating Ox Harley for the title, but I make him either unmask to keep the title, or he's gonna get stripped of the title and it goes back to Ox Harley. Then like Ian beats me up for I forget what led to that on one of those shows. Ian beats me up. I suspend him. He comes back as the Midnight Rider, and then he beats Ox for the title. And I do the same thing. Like, you got to unmask, prove you're not Ian Rotten in order to keep this title. And he just decides to give up the angle completely in that moment. And he just looks at me and goes, "You're gonna let me keep this title?" And I'm like, "What the fuck do I do?" You know, I'm in front of the people and I'm like, what the fuck do I do? Am I supposed to stand tough? And, you know, no, I'm not going to cave to your demands. You're suspended. And he's like, and he just like keeps telling me, and I'm like, well, you know what? You didn't go over any of this with me. You haven't smartened me up on any of this. So I finally just go, you know what? You're the champ. And I walk out of the ring. And I go to the back, and he was like, "I'm glad you picked up on the fact that I wanted you to just we're just gonna go with it." And I'm like, "Well, I'm glad, because you know you didn't smarten me up." And I think at one point he might have tried to say something in Kearney, and I'm like, "I don't fucking know what the hell you're saying to me right now. Like, I took 8 years of Spanish and I can't speak it a lick, and you're trying on a fly to give me a different language here. I don't know what the hell's going on."
Yeah, if you look on the picture you put up from the bull beating you took, I was one carrying the stretcher, which was a table to haul your ass out of the
Yes,
ring,
yes. That's Ben.
and the striped shirt right
Ben is
there,
here in the striped shirt,
and the
you
striped
know,
shirt.
carrying me. And you can see there's a couple of shots in my forehead there. Barely any blood, because I squeezed it all, wiped it all off, tried to squeeze.
But Bull used to beat your ass all over the place, man. And Bull
He would.
Payne isn't, I mean, he's not 6 foot five, but he is the thickest, strongest son of a bitch you will see, and quite frightening. So when he'd come out, when that music would hit, get out of the way, and there your dumb ass was every week. He'd grab you, suplex you to hell, and you'd be out of it, man. I mean, he was just a, super nice guy. I mean, I've got to talk to him a few times in the back or whatever, when I was still doing some things. But the guy, that the persona of Bull Payne and just how big and ornery he was. I mean, I wouldn't want to have anything to do with getting beat down by Bull.
No, and I mean, you would have to have your literally, you'd have to have your head on a swivel when you were out there doing anything, especially at that time frame with Bull. I remember this was like well after you had stopped coming to shows. It was like Indianapolis, had to have been like 2001-ish, somewhere around there, maybe 2002. Show in Indianapolis, and I have to do the ring announcing, and Bull's music hits, he comes out. Normally, I would like play up being scared shitless and I'd run out of the ring and be nowhere near. And for some reason, that night, I just stayed in the ring and I'm not even paying attention. I'm thinking about something else. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Bull takes his bat and just hits me right across the back. Up in the shoulder area with the bat, and I just crumbled like a bagger, and I roll out of the ring and crawl under the ring so he couldn't get to me because I was afraid that he was gonna just and like he felt so bad afterwards that he gave me one of his t-shirts. He was like, "Here, I'm so sorry, I got carried away," and he's like, "But you know to always pay attention when I'm out there, motherfucker. You don't ever turn your back on me and ignore me like I'm not a threat." And I'm like, "It will never, ever, ever happen again." And but yeah, Bull, you'd never wanted to fuck with that man. He to this day scares the shit out of me. And if I hear that song in a grocery store or out in public at a restaurant, and that what is it, Eruption or whatever the hell the name of it, whatever it was called, if that song comes on, I'm immediately looking around going, "Oh shit, is Bull here? Do I need to run for cover?" Even though we ended as teammates with the bad motherfuckers, I wouldn't, if I hear that music, I'm like, "No, I gotta run." So we're getting here towards the end of some story times. Do you have any stories? You said you didn't do a lot backstage. But you got
No.
anything else that might have happened backstage other than just the shock of watching everybody drinking like a fish before going out there, or
No,
any ribs that they tried to play on you or anything?
nobody really tried to pull any ribs on me. I was a persona non grata really for that part. But the when I was going to shows and participating in that sort of things. The things that stuck out to me are, I don't think you were there for a couple of these. When they did the invasion with NWA, where Dennis Carluzza came in and brought a bunch of guys from Jersey down that first night, where they did the deal where Ian was going to bring the IWA into the NWA fold, and they ended up, Dennis turned on him and cussed out the fans, and they had brought cheese to the ring, and they were throwing cheese at the rats in the ring rats
I
in the
don't think I remember
bleachers.
that one.
You weren't there. It was a summer show. It was in the summer of 97, so you were probably back in Morris, but that was on YouTube for a while, and I guess whoever Ian owed some money to or whatever had it taken down. But that's something that I've always remember. And I was also there the night of the Wolfie D Ox shoot
Oh,
fight
that
that
was
happened
crazy.
during the PG-13 Ox and Pondo tag match. A friend of mine, this was during the summer too, a friend of mine who'd never been went with me to a show, and So I'm telling him everything that's going on. I'm explaining blading to him, everything else. And then they've got the tag match while Melee breaks out. Wolfie's got this, baseball bat with thumbtacks on it. He's swinging it around wildly. He catches Ox in the face with it. Ox gets mad, grabs the bat, throws the bat down, and they pull their fists up like they're going to have a boxing match. And this is on the outside of the ring. And my buddy's like, "Now what's going on?" I said, "I don't think this is supposed to happen." And so they, start to fist fight there for a few minutes before everybody from the back storms out to break it up. But that was pretty wild. And that's available. You can see that whole fucking shit show on YouTube. But really, the parts in Lexington, we had those shows at the National Guard Armory. At one point, when Ian was doing some videoing for television, he had talked to the National Guard Armory. They had those tube lights in the ceiling, but only maybe a third of them actually worked. So it was pretty dim. And he had talked to whoever was in charge at the Guard Armory and said, "Well, I'm going to film television here during our next show. Can you all change these light bulbs out to brighten it up so my cameras will be able to film?" And they said, "Yep, no problem, no problem. We'll get it taken care of. We'll replace all the bulbs so it's nice and bright for your television production." That's when I think Ian had that weekly TV show
Yeah,
on WBNA or whatever. Yeah. So anyway, so we get to the show to set everything up. They had not changed a single light bulb. If anything, a couple of them probably had burnt out from the last show that we ran. So Ian convinces my dumb ass to go to like a movie company lighting gear production place and rent some very expensive lights so just they can have the show filmed. So I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I call this place up. They say, "Yeah, we've got some a lighting tree that you can rent." So I go to the place, get the lighting tree. Again, I'm a student. I work during the summer, save money to spend during the year. So I'm not rolling in the dough, but I go and rent this light tree, and it's not tall enough. So they decide to put it on a table in the back. And so the whole time I'm thinking, "Oh man, if they fight back there and this light thing gets knocked over and breaks, I'm just dead meat." So luckily, the light tree survived, and I was able to take it back and get my deposit back. But that's one of those mysterious shows that was taped, never to see the light of day. And I don't know what happened. I think like the week, the next show or show after that is when something happened, and we ended up getting either kicked out of the National Guard Armory or they priced us out. And so we ended up running a couple other places in Lexington. We ran a bar downtown that had closed because there was a shooting. But we were able to rent the second floor to run a show, which was awesome because we had to carry the ring and 50 million chairs up a windy flight of old rickety wooden stairs. And it was just horrible.
And I remember
And,
Ian the whole time going, "Are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? On the second floor of the
so I
building."
don't know.
And we're in the staircase, luckily there was like the outside staircase,
Yeah.
and I can remember there's power lines, and we got all these 16-foot long steel poles reaching them up, trying to like lift them up over, because you couldn't twist it through the staircase. And so we're just like trying to lift 16-feet steel beams up into the air and get it pushed up. And how somebody didn't get electrocuted and hit one of those power lines, I have no idea. But that was an entertaining night when with that one.
Just,
And then there
and
was,
just horrible. And then that we had to rent a barn in
yes,
Versailles.
the barn in Versailles. I couldn't remember if it was Versailles or Georgetown. So
It
yeah,
was.
because looking on the cage match site that had results, it just always said Lexington. It didn't have the
No,
ones
that.
that said Versailles.
Yeah, the show they ran in the barn in Versailles, which is not, it was just probably 20 minutes from Lexington, but Ian decided to run it on the same night as a WWF pay-per-view. So the attendance was lax, and it was a dirt, just an old dirty barn. There really wasn't a locker room. I think the They opened one of the back garage doors, and the boys got dressed behind the U-Haul truck. And it's the first time I saw a piss bucket at an IWA show. That was exciting.
Well,
But
and what I remember from that show, and he just recently passed, so God bless him and rest in peace. But DJ Donnie
I remember Donnie.
was DJ Donnie was at that show, and there was a porta potty that was set up there. And I remember with the porta potty, he went in to use the porta potty before the show, and like Mitch Page would constantly fuck with DJ Donnie. And so it was like Mitch and a couple of the other guys went up and just started shaking the hell out of this and threatening to tip it over while DJ Donnie was inside this porta potty. And he came out and like the blue shit. He had like blue stains on like his clothes from how much they were shaking it, and the shit just bouncing everywhere. And he was like, "Oh, you motherfuckers! Oh, you motherfuckers!" And I specifically remember that from the Barn show. And but like I said, I just heard that DJ Donnie passed not too long ago, and Donnie was a character. He was a character. So rest in peace. And it's a lot of the guys from that time frame have started to pass. And I know you brought up Coraluza and the NWA thing. The one thing that I remember the most from that, and was a show that I did get to go to, so I think it was in the fall, but it was right after Princess Di passed away, getting chased by the paparazzi or whatever. And so it was like we were on friendly terms with Ian, but I don't think we had started doing the Lexington stuff yet. So, we weren't like in the know on everything that was going on at the time. And he's doing a, moment of silence for Princess Di. And I can remember I'm in the front row and I'm bitching to you and Les. And I'm like, what in the fuck are we doing? Why in the fuck are we doing a moment of silence for Princess Di? What the fuck does this have to do with anything? And I'm getting livid, and I'm like ready to just blow a gasket. And then Dennis Coraluza comes out, "Fuck that bitch!" And he became the biggest baby face in the world to me from that. I'm like cheering my ass off for him, going, "Yes, fuck that bitch, exactly. Why are we doing it?" And I'm like, "Ah, we're doing it so Coraluza can be a heel." And that was my memory of the NWA invasion angle at that time.
Yeah, that would have been that big. They did a blow-off show in like September of '97, so that was before we got involved with the Lexington stuff. But that was because I went to a couple times in the summer. The New Jersey guys came in before they had the big show that you were back. School was in session for that we went to, where they brought a whole bunch of guys from New Jersey. The only one I really remember is Sal Sincere, who was still who whatever his non-WWF gimmick name was, Tony something, I don't remember, but he
Tom
was
Brandy?
there. Tom Brandy, yes,
Tom
I
Brandy,
think. Yeah,
yes. Yeah.
so Tom Brandy was there.
But he was great. He was
He
great on
was,
those shows. I loved
yep.
him. He
He
came
could
in and
wrestle.
he was really good. He had a great series of matches with Bull and with Tracy Smothers back then. And I looked forward to the shows that good old Sal Sincere would be on. And he was great on those shows. I was so surprised because I did not care for him at all watching him in WWF at the time. But then he came in, and the shows that he was on, those were some really good matches. And if there was footage of him, I'd watch him right now. I'd rewatch him right now. So I think we should start wrapping this up. But before we do, we have to tell the story of going to the WWF pay-per-view with Ian.
Oh, yeah.
Which it was it in your house? Is that what it?
It was In Your House Ground Zero. It was the first 3 hour In Your House pay-per-view, where they made them longer. They had announced that they were going to have the pay-per-view in Louisville. So tickets were going to go on sale at the house show before that, because they would always put tickets for the next show on. So I went by myself. I just bought the cheapest ticket I could to go to the house show they had, and pay-per-view was in September, so it would have been in during the summer, probably in June or July. I went and bought it, was able to get, I think we're in like the third row ringside.
Yeah, it was second or third row.
Yep, bought three tickets, got a ticket for you, me, and Les. And then once the show rolled around, that's when we were starting to buddy up with Ian. And I think Paul had to work, so somebody had to babysit Les and Paula's son, Adam. And I think Les drew the short straw on that. So he had to stay behind. We had an extra ticket to go to the show, and said, "Hey, we'll take Ian." So you can probably find some still pictures
Oh,
that
yes.
you can add to the thing later. But we had some signs. One said, "Brett humps." No, excuse me. There was a popular sign that said, "Brett humps cows," that had gone around
Yes.
that we'd seen on some shows. And we said, "Well, this is Louisville, Jerry Lawler's hometown. How about Jerry humps calves, as in baby cows?"
Right.
So we made a sign that said that. And then we had one that said like IWA. And then I made another
Yep.
sign that said Heartbreak Gimp on it. And so if you go on the YouTube or on well, they're on, I don't know where the hell the shows are now, Peacock or whatever. You can go on there and you can see us and our signs clear as day, right behind where Vince and Lawler and Jim Ross were doing their pre-show introductions. And also a few times during the show, you can see the signs just as visible as can be. It's pretty funny. Heartbreak
And
Gimp and right there with Michaels getting his ass beat by the Undertaker.
my favorite part, and we didn't know it at the time, of course, but then when going back and rewatching the pay-per-view and listening to the commentary, I think it was it Scott Putski that got hurt?
Yes.
Scott Putski got hurt, so that match ended up getting cut real short, so they had to fill time, so they brought the midgets out. And it was like one of the midgets was like El Torito or something, like a baby bull or whatever. And during the commentary of that match, they make reference to our sign, because like Lawler's like, oh, he's as strong as a bull, and like Ross is like, or a calf. Oh. And
I don't remember that. I'll have to go back
Yeah, you're going to have to
and
go back and
watch
watch that,
it.
because I forget exactly, but they definitely, because I mean, we used to have the still photo, and I'll have to look it up, and I'll definitely put it with the tweet when I'm, advertising this show. But the signs like right behind Lawler, Lawler hopes, and it was, there was like the, and I think it was more than just Brett. I think there was like for like 3 months, every Raw,
Yeah.
there was like
Somebody
somebody
humps
humps
cows.
cows. Somebody humps cows. And so we were like, it's got to be humps calves. It's got to be humps calves. Lawler humps calves. And
And I assume
Ian
the
just slinking in his seat. Every time we'd hold that sign up, he would just shrink and be like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this. And yeah, we had like an IWA every Thursday night, came, Dixie Highway advertising it, and the what was it? The Headbangers win the tag titles. They
Yes.
come right out to Ian and take Ian into the back, and he like leaves us in the crowd
Yeah,
while
so
he
nice
goes
of
into
him.
the like while he goes in the back for like the entire fucking show, and leaves us, sitting out there. And I think, yes, I'm getting it in my ears here. Inquiring people want to know, were you ever paid back for that ticket?
Negatory, good buddy.
Excellent.
Negatory.
One
I don't.
person paid for their ticket.
You paid. I paid.
I pay, yes.
Ian didn't pay. Les did not pay. I mean, that's. But hey, that's. I think the ticket was probably $25 or $30, so it
Yeah,
wasn't the end of the
it
world.
definitely not
It's
the
not
way they
like
charge
now
now.
where they charge $1,000 to sit ringside or something out. Just
Right.
ridiculous. But yeah, great memories, and I'll have to go back and listen to the commentary during that match. And for those of you listening that are unaware, Mr. Lawler had some issues with some underage women in the Louisville area in the years before the show that we took the sign to. So if you Google that, you'll be able to find out all you want. I'm sure Wave 3 has some old
Oh, yes.
stories about the king and his taste in the younger sex. So
All right, well, Ben, it has been a blast getting to catch up and relive some of these memories. And, we didn't touch on everything. So there's always room to maybe, if less feels better later on, can get the two of you back on, or definitely get you back on and go over
absolutely.
some more memories and just to catch up on old times. And as if you want to lean back a little in your chair
Oh
there
yeah,
and
here's
show
my
off, we've got, if
there
you're
you go.
listening, there you are. You got the Jim Fannin used to have a posse, remember the family t-shirt. I've got the Jim Father shirt on. So if you're listening to this podcast, remember to head on over to brokenmerchtable.com. And I was like very shocked yesterday. I got on there to I was going to look at some of Nick Manoa's t-shirts that he has available. Because I'd be coming down for my birthday and wanted to take some photos with Nick and everybody with all the shirts so we can, help advertise our t-shirts. And my shirts are listed as best seller. And
Oh,
I mean,
congratulations.
of course, almost all of that's bought by me. I've got one of each. There's three shirts. I've got one of each. My in-laws bought like two shirts each, so that was four shirts that they bought. I know that you bought a shirt, Les bought a shirt. One of my friends, Ray from up here, he's bought a shirt. So I don't, I'll have to like reach out and ask him just how many t-shirts have been sold. I get the royalty check every month, and 3 months of having t-shirts available on brokenmerchtable.com, I'm $20 away from making more money from t-shirt sales than I got paid for being on 12 years worth of IWA shows. So, the next royalty check that comes out, if I sell a couple more shirts, I will have officially made more money from t-shirts than I did. It's about the only paydays I got, the night that Balls Mahoney hit me with the chair and like all four guys gave me the finishing move and pinned me in the barbed wire match. I got a payday that night, and I think I got a payday after one of the other nights where I did something and got pulverized. Otherwise, I never got a payday, and I guess it is what it is. My dumbass fault for sticking around as long as I did and not, demanding to get any paydays or trying to get put onto other shows. But it is what it is. But it's been a blast to catch up with you, and I look forward to doing this one again with you. And I think I've got, for those of you that are listening, the next podcast, I believe I've got something set up with Brent Blades, and we're going to do very similar, just a trip down memory lane, talking over things with former IWA referee Brent Blades. So come on back and we'll catch you next time. Thank you.